Our next guest is blazing a trail in the world of California winemaking. Victoria Coleman is the first Black woman to be named a head winemaker in Napa Valley at Lobo Wines. And she joins us now. Welcome, Victoria.
Hi, Celeste.
I wonder if first you would tell us what kind of wine Lobo makes. What does your wine taste like?
So, well, it tastes fantastic, but I started out with Lobo making Cabernet Sauvignons. I have one that's a blend and one that's 100% Cabernet. And we are also making Merlot, a Syrah blend, and a Rosé.
So you are not, you were not raised in a winemaking tradition, I understand. This is something that you took on after the death of your mother. What drew you to this field?
So it's hard because I was seeing someone who was working in Napa, and I moved just for a change from Seattle. And when I moved to Napa, the only thing was just like, you're either in a restaurant or you're working in a winery. And so I just started out working in a winery. It was supposed to be temporary and ended up staying for 4 years and getting into school and just creating my path.
Hard enough to take something on as a brand new field, you know, later in life, but also what was the demographic makeup of your classes? Were there a lot of women? Were there a lot of women of color?
There were a handful of women. I don't think I can recall any women of color necessarily.
You were the only one.
Situation. I was the only one.
What was that like?
Just because I kept my focus on, you know, school and just getting through the program. It wasn't difficult in that sense, but it was challenging in a way just because I was commuting from Napa. So I didn't have, you know, the friends or the study groups that I would have liked to have had. That made it difficult.
I feel like there's a lot that you're not saying here about how difficult it must have been, but let me leave that for the moment. and ask, when did you first know you were good at this?
It might have been the time when it was my second vintage that I was showing, and I was sent to a tasting and then a dinner with Robert Parker, and there were so many other people trying to get their wines in front of him.
Robert Parker, for those who don't know, is now retired, but a legendary wine critic with one of the most influential newsletters in the industry.
And I was kind of like standing in a line and thought, like, how am I, like me, little me, going to get in front of this person? And so he just happened to be seated at the table of the restaurant owner who I knew. So I sent a glass over to him. And he came back, he sent someone over to actually get the bottle of wine to take to their table. And so I felt it then, and then Robert Parker came to me at the end and complimented me and asked me if he could write about the wine that I just made. And he gave it a score of 92, which is not like a crazy score, but it sold the wine out like immediately. And that was a 2006 Mario Bazan Cabernet Sauvignon.
And you made a Cabernet Sauvignon with a friend while you were still in school, right? And you both crushed the grapes with your feet?
Yes, I can't even believe that's out there. Yes.
I got to ask, because most people, when I talk about crushing wine grapes with their feet, they think of Lucille Ball. But is that still a real thing that people do?
I think people do it like it seems romantic, maybe. I think I know of wineries that have offered it. And I've actually, where I've had a small fermentation, I shouldn't say this, but I've done it in recent years.
Well, we came across this interesting story from KCET on how wine was originally a tool of conquest by Spanish missionaries who used forced labor, enslaved people, to build their mission system until Mexican independence ended all of that. There's a lot of interesting history to winemaking, and some of it is problematic. How do you grapple with the history of your industry?
I try to look at more looking at it forward, and just with the opportunities that have been presented to me, and then also with even the Hispanic wine brands and winemakers. You know, it's like I'm new to this and I'm aware, but it's just like I just try to look forward and try to do something good and positive and get in front of people who are like me or people of color.
I mean, it's never easy to be the first. History tells us that, that it can be difficult to be the first one in any field. How is this conversation going? Are you ending up being pulled into this conversation often on how to diversify the winemaking industry?
Yes, in the last year. And I just think it's, some people say it's like, it's all in the marketing. You know, I grew up in a non-wine drinking family. It was more like cocktails. We just talk about it all the time. It's just like, how do we get in front of people? And why is it that this is like a first for us, you know, like with the, even with the support that I'm getting from everyone, I have people that come out that don't drink wine and they come out to support people like me, which there are like three of us, you know, here in the Valley. I've been fortunate to know enough people early on in my career to put me in the right places and in front of the right people. And I would like to do that for people as well.
So my family did not grow up coming from a Black and Jewish family. My family did not grow up drinking wine at all on the Black side, and they drank not great kosher wine on the other side. Can you give me a sales pitch to people in our community on not only why to try wine more, but what kind of wines to start with?
I mean, whatever appeals to them, but wine can take you places. It goes with so many different, you know, like foods. And I would invite them to like play with that, you know, food pairings with your wines and see what you like. Also with wine just being like a vehicle to take you to places that you've never really thought of going. You know, I found myself in China. I found myself in France. I hope to find myself other places, you know, in Argentina and Germany with Riesling. Wine can be fun, and it's not as intimidating as it may seem.
So I wonder what is cutting edge in your industry right now? What do you see on coming in the future that may change what you do and how you do it?
Well, I think what will have a huge impact is like just the climate, you know?
Mm, yeah.
And just hoping that people are finding ways to just turn things around. I think we have people here that are looking to leave the area just because of, you know, how warm it's getting, and you can't grow specific grapes any longer as it starts to warm up.
Yeah. So what's your wine you're drinking right now?
I have a favorite that I drink. It's the Atlas Peak Cabernet Sauvignon from Lobo, and it's a hillside vineyard. It's a blend of Cabernet with some Merlot and Petit Verdot, but to me it's like the wine that's most interesting, where you take a sip and you're thinking about it, like what you're actually drinking versus like, this is good and you're just drinking it, but you're actually having a conversation about it with yourself.
What difference does it make that it's a hillside vineyard? Why does that matter?
Oh, so a lot of the hillsides, they don't have soil. So it's like, it makes the vines more interesting because they're struggling, you know, to produce really good fruit. And they do. Just a lot of minerality from the rock. There's a lot of structure in the wine versus a vine on the valley floor that, I mean, you get lush, rich fruit, but there's no struggle. And it's just like the water's readily there and available. It's, I guess, probably like people, you know, the less you have to work, the less interesting probably.
Yeah. I'm going to have to end it there because that's a mic drop. Victoria Coleman is head winemaker at Lobo Wines in Napa Valley, California. Victoria, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.